Welcome to our podcast, Step into the Future, which is about fashion, sustainability, and social change. My name is Katharina, and I work for the sustainable German fashion brand Melaware that is producing textiles, bags, and backpacks in India according to the Global Organic Textile Standard, as well as after the Fair Trade Cotton Standard. And today I'm very glad to get some insights about the current situation of textile workers in India, almost 1 year after the corona pandemic has started. Me and Lea Kress from the German NGO Femnet are going to talk with Parvati Madappa from the Indian organization CVDEP. And Parvati will give us some insights about the current situation of workers in India and also about her work with CVDEP. Yeah, I'm very glad to introduce her today. And hi, Parvati, how are you today? And from where are you giving this podcast?
Hi, Katharine. I am here based in India, and I have been working from home like many other people around the globe due to the pandemic. Right now, I'm giving you the podcast from a place called Kodagu, which is on the Western Ghats, and it's a small district in Karnataka, and I'm doing very well and hope you're doing well too.
Yeah, thank you. Maybe you can tell us a little bit more about CVDEP and your work with CVDEP in India, and what are you doing?
So CVDEP is a worker rights organization. The organization was set up in the year 2000. And thereon, the organization has looked at empowering women workers in the garment industry. At the organization, and the organization has also moved on from the garment sector to work with workers in the leather sector, in the plantations, as well as in the electronic sector. Of course, we have done a bit of work in the construction sector and heavy machinery as well. But our biggest strength has been working very closely with the garment sector. And one of the reasons why we we are focused on this sector is because it's a sector which has majority of women workers and who do not have knowledge or have very limited knowledge on their rights and entitlements. So yeah, and in CVDEP, my primary work is and focus is on the garment sector. I manage the projects of the garment sector for the organization.
Okay, great. Of whom was CVDEP founded, and how did everything started?
So CVDEP was founded in 2000 by a group of like-minded people whose focus was to do something for women. And at this time, they saw that, especially after 1995, the free trade agreement came into place where the markets opened up for trade. Before that, there was a restriction on trade as to only certain percentage could be exported. Once the agreement came into place, there was the open market opened up, and then what we saw was that a lot of women who were already working in the garment factories started feeling a lot more pressure in terms of producing garments. They had forced overtime, they had exorbitant production targets per day, and all this led to a group of people who thought that they will educate these workers on their rights and entitlements, because these were something that they realized was not there among workers, education about labor rights and their entitlements. So one of the persons Then amongst the group of people who collectively decided on setting up SEVIDEP continued, and his name is Mr. Gopinath Parakuni. He was working as the general secretary for a few years after the organization got set up, and yeah, he was one of the founding members for the organization, and yeah, he took it forward and to what it is now 20 years later.
Okay, nice. So a lot has happened since then, and the organization has developed since that a lot, I guess. But maybe now to you, Leah, you can shortly say, how do you know Parvati, and how does the collaboration between FemNet and CVDEP looks like?
Hey, I'm happy to tell a little bit more about that. And FemNet is a women's organization, so we are closely collaborating with CVDEP on projects on women's and workers' rights, in particular in the textile industry. And personally, I know Parvati from webinars last year that we organized on the impact of COVID-19 on Indian textile workers. And maybe there's someone listening to this podcast who was actually joining one of the webinars and has already had the honor to see Parvati there. And I think for FemNet, it's important to mention that we're not the only ones working on these issues, but we are part of the German Partnership for Sustainable Textiles, the so-called Textilbündnis, where Melaware is also part of. And this multi-stakeholder initiative includes members from businesses, the government, civil society organizations, and standard organizations. So within that whole initiative, there is a close collaboration between CVDEP and the civil society organizations like FemNet. And for example, CVDEP facilitated a workshop on gender-specific violence at the workplace. And I think that's really important that we get this impact input directly from the production countries when we talk about these issues, and we get the expertise. And right now, the collaboration happens on the topic of complaint mechanisms. Again, the Textilbündnis will start an initiative on that, so that textile workers in Indian supplier factories of these German brands will get access to a complaint mechanism, which was initially developed by Fairwear Foundation. And CVDEP provides critical guidance here and shows or how the implementation can be improved. Yeah. I think that's mostly it. But one other thing just to briefly mention is also research. There, CVDEP published a study on the impact of Corona and the national lockdown in India on workers together with two civil society organizations called Inkota and Südwind, which are also partners of FemNet. So there's a lot of exchange happening and in many different ways and also for many years.
Okay, so it's good to hear that FemNet and CVDEP India are working so closely together. Maybe now back to you, Parvati. Can you give us a short introduction how the situation for most textile workers has been when the pandemic started 1 year ago? How did their situation related to work and their everyday life has changed 1 year ago?
So the pandemic, we know, started sometime in late December 2019. And I think it spread across the globe sometime in the early 2020. Similarly, I think it was around March or February end when India was infected with the virus. And I think it was March. And then suddenly, March 24th or 22nd, I'm a little confused on the dates, but then there was a sudden lockdown that was announced by the central government, and the lockdown was applicable to all everyone in the country. This was the most impromptu thing, because there was no planning before before locking down of the country, where there was no plan as to what would they do with the working class people. And if you actually had followed the news, I'm sure many of them have done that. We have one of the decades largest migrant exodus was something that was seen during this time, where we saw a lot of migrant workers going back to their homes because of the lockdown there wasn't transportation, and we saw that a lot of people started walking back to their homes, which was maybe thousands of kilometers or maybe more than 2,000 kilometers. So this was the situation. And of course, the lockdown also was pretty serious for the garment sector, because the garment sector in, if I could say, is in Karnataka alone, that's one of the states in India, there are about 500,000 to 600,000 garment workers working in the factories. And these workers were suddenly told that it's a lockdown and you would not have to come to work. And it was really shocking, because maybe for the first week everyone thought they're going to stay at home. Then the lockdown initially was for the first 14 days, and then 2 weeks people were like fine. But then the workers who worked for the month of March till the time the lockdown began did not get their salaries at the end of March or beginning of April. And then the second lockdown continued. So by the time it was April 15th, workers did not have a job and have a job to go to because of the lockdown. They did not have any kind of salaries in their account for the previous months that they have worked, nor did the managements or brands put any effort to see how these workers were living about and how their conditions were for those few months few weeks where they were staying back at home.
And how has the situation then changed over time? I think the lockdown was almost 2 months in India, and then everything slowly started to open up again. How did that work?
So during this lockdown, like I said, there were a lot of migrant workers who have gone back home working. These are migrants not just who are working in the garment factories. They're workers who are working in different sectors. Could be construction, could be heavy metal, could be any other industry. So what we saw was all the short-distance migrant workers who were working in the Bangalore garment factories moved back to their villages, because one was they did not have any source of livelihood, so they thought they'll go back to their villages and try and grow something and eat, or get basic groceries from the public distribution scheme that is there in India. But on the other hand, for the other few workers who stayed back, they started the factories opened up for a bit, where they started, in the month of April, maybe around 15th or 20th, some factories opened up to produce personal protective equipments, and some workers who lived close to the factories had a chance to get back to the factories. On the other hand, factories took up this as one chance to ask the workers who used to come from distant places not to come back to work saying that because of COVID, you don't have to come back to work right now. And since there was still no transportation, workers found it very difficult to come back to work. Neither schools and colleges were open, so even to leave their children behind at home, it was very difficult. So this was like a really chaotic situation for workers who, and it's very important to understand that this set of workers are basically women, and also the families of garment workers. If you see the pattern, it's mostly a women-led household where some of them are all by themselves. Some of them live with their partners, but maybe their partners maybe their husbands are doing some odd jobs where they don't have a fixed salary every month. So it's basically a family which is women driven because of this job in this industry. And it was a huge chaos for them because schools were closed. They couldn't do anything. They even we've seen cases where even workers did not have food to eat, rent to pay to their landlords. Some of them were like thrown out of their homes, and schools were demanding for fees, and workers did not know how to make be able to pay this because, of course, the salaries didn't come. It's and also we need to understand that this industry, where there is a lot of demand that has been rising for increased wages, there is the Asia Floor Wage and other alliance groups, as well as all of us, a labor rights organization, which are demanding for a better wage for these workers. There is a minimum wage that has been set by the Asia Floor Wage Alliance. And if you look at the salary that they're getting, the wages that they're getting, it's just one third of the minimum wage. So, you know, it's not that these workers have money, they have saved up money where they could live off it. They're really, they're living barely hand to mouth. And this whole pandemic has pushed them into really extreme poverty. They were already poor, but now they've been pushed or forced to extreme poverty.
Yeah, it's a really difficult situation because most of the workers, I guess, also used up their whole savings and are back in their villages. But can you do you have experiences how they restarted working? Are there like, are most of the workers back in the factories, or are they still in their villages?
Most of the workers are returning back more recently. So for many months since April, or maybe like let's say from May, when the factories opened up, the factories ran in just maybe half the size of what it was earlier. So if there were 1,000 workers, now it was just 500 workers who were working because some of them had not returned back. And since transportation was still not available, and to use public transport was a threat because was not very safe. So workers, and like I mentioned earlier, these are workers who have like, they are on the age group of the workers in the garment factories are in the age group of 18 to 35, 40. So they have like younger children, and it's very difficult to leave their children and go to work. So in the most recent, like maybe from the last 2 months, we've seen the factories increasing the capacity of the number of workers in the workforce. Otherwise, the factories were not functional at full strength. So more recently, we are also seeing that there were some garment workers who had traveled from long who were long distance migrants, like who had traveled from the northern states in India, and they had returned back. And more recently, we see that they have come back come back to Bangalore and have joined the workforce. Of course, it's not continuity of employment here. They had to resign and rejoin into the factories, which again means that they have had losses because they can't get all their entitlements. They don't have continuity of service. They have a break in career. So you see, there are a lot of repercussions that happen because of this COVID situation.
Yeah. And then to this difficult situation of the workers also comes a change of the Indian labor law. We heard about a reform of the labor law that provoked also a wave of protests and strikes across India. Maybe you can give us a brief outline how this new reform has affected workers across India.
So the labor law changes have been going on under discussion for the past maybe 5-6 years, right from the time this government has come into power. I think what is what we need to look at very carefully is this. It was only during this pandemic that many of the these labor laws got passed in the parliament, because earlier it was not that all of these were passed. There was a little bit of delay. There was a lot of constant struggle, trade unions, movements to stop this. But it was during this pandemic when everything was closed, lockdown, huge protests, huge gatherings were not allowed. It was during this time that the actual labor laws came into being. It's just that maybe the situation of COVID has made it easier for the lawmakers to change the laws. And if you look at the labor laws right now, they are not, if you actually look at them, they are not pro workers. Most of the labor laws are pro business. So if you there is a lot of threat. I don't like earlier, just a small example. We can go on this for a day to also, because there's so much of changes in labor laws. But just a small example is like, you know, earlier, if you were, 10 members or 10 members, you could have you could register a trade union. But right now the law says that you have to have 300 members to register a trade union. So that itself is one weak point. And if you look at another point, which says that earlier, if you were 30 or more workers, you had to have registered under the labor department saying that you're setting up this factory, you have to follow all the laws, all the guidelines. But right now, if it's a factory with less than 300 workers, none of these laws are applicable. Also that companies have a free hand, just in case earlier, if there were more than 30 workers, one of the laws stated that you have to give a prior intimation before you close down the factory. But according to the new labor laws, you don't have to give any. So earlier it was that you have to give a prior intimation, you have to pay all the dues, you have to pay 3 months of salaries to the workers before you shut down. But right now the law says that you can shut shop if you're, you can shut shop in case you are facing losses. You can just one fine day close up and go. So these are stuff which is pro business, where you see that for workers, it's a weak moment. They are already, the workers are already the weaker sections in terms of their access to their laws and entitlements. And now with these labor laws coming into place, they are further, they've become even more vulnerable right now.
And they have lost parts of their social securities they had before the pandemic. Yeah, that's a difficult situation. But maybe you can also shortly say something to your role of your organization. How do you actually support workers during COVID and during these difficult labor reforms? What are you doing?
Yeah, so in CVDEP from the past many years, like I said, is a labor rights organization. Our core strength has been on worker education and research. But one thing that we had taken up during these COVID times was that we started relief work, because we thought we've never done relief work in the past, or we never had any kind of contingency funds for these workers. But during this COVID, we saw that the need, they were in real poverty. They were in real bad shape. That's when we thought that we should get into relief work, and CVDEP started doing a bit of relief work in terms of it could have been providing groceries to the workers, payment of school fees for their children, payment of rent, electricity, water, recharging their mobile phones, buying sanitary products for women and children, of garment workers. And then, so these are the kinds of relief work that we tried to provide to garment workers in the last few months. We still continue to do a bit of it. We tried to get some funds from our external partners and through our grassroots level partners, the Garment Labor Union and Munnade, we tried to disseminate these to in the community of garment workers. So yeah, this is some kind of work. Other than that, also we have done we tried to assess the situation and speak to our partners, providing them with some survey samples. I mean, I know it was difficult because we couldn't step out, but through phones we tried to get as much as information and tried. We are also trying to work with our grassroots level partners to speak to some of the factory units where factories have been shut down after COVID. So some of the factories just shut down without paying the workers their settlement amounts dues. So we're trying to work with them to so that they ensure that they get their dues in place as well.
Yeah, I think Leah also wanted to mention now the emergency fund of FEMNET, which also comes into account at that topic. Leah, yes. Maybe you can say something to
yes, this. Because usually, FEMNET is also mostly working on structural change and educational work, but to support these relief efforts and the relief work of CVDEP and other partner organizations in the production countries, FEMNET set up an emergency fund where we collect donations that we then can pass on to our partner organizations that do the distribution of groceries and the most urgent provide the most urgent support that is needed. So I'm not sure if it's possible for you, Katharina, to share a link when you share the podcast, but sure. For everyone listening here, yes, you can find it if you Google FEMNET and emergency fund, or I'm sure you will find it on the website.
Yeah, I will definitely link that in the show notes. But maybe back to another question we had to you, Parvati. What should brands in Germany or in Europe or general do to help to protect workers' rights if they source from India? Do you have any tips or advices?
So I think said this earlier in many forums that I see that brands in the end of the day are the primary employers for these workers, because it's only that these brands are providing their business is that the workers have a job. So it is very important for brands to understand that if workers in their supply chains are facing a trouble, that means that it is their responsibility that they do more than what is needed so that the workers are not affected. Because if you look at the situation, on one hand, you have the workers who are deprived of a decent wage, deprived of their rights and entitlements. And not, it's just not them. It's even their children who are deprived of many things for the future of the child. On the other hand, the brands are the ones who are making their profits, growing richer by the day, opening more than one store or maybe more than 10 stores, giving their businesses, having sale after sale. So if you are able to do that, I would say that at least you should share a percentage of your profit with the workers. You are responsible to ensure that workers get the living wage as per the benchmark that is there around in the Asian subcontinent, or for India, whatever is the benchmark. It is important that the brands understand that, and it's important that brands recognize freedom of association, which is though all brands, I think, in their documents and memorandums of understanding and they speak that, saying that we are for freedom of association, but I don't see any of the factories, like, even if we can point out, I don't see even 10% of factories in India or in any other part of the country who have freedom of association. Workers are still fighting for just basic rights, like even drinking water inside the factory or using a toilet inside the factory during the factory hours. So if we are looking, when we look closely, we understand that brands are just not doing enough. They are the ones who are taking the profits and becoming richer by the day. And the biggest example that we can see is one of the let's look at the online portal like Amazon. They, if you look at during the pandemic, they've grown tenfold. Similarly, there are many other brands which have grown even during this crisis, it's not affected them in a huge way at all. But it's, in the end of the day, it's the workers. So at least what I would say is, I'm demanding that they should ensure that workers get their living wage and their social security entitlements. Brands should also allow workers to have freedom of association so that they can have collective bargaining agreements. They can work together to get their better tomorrow.
Yeah, I totally agree to your points, and I would also add some points out of my view from a sustainable textile brand as Milaware. We really carefully select the producers in India. We really look who are the ones who have who work after high social security standards and also after high environmental standards. And so before we decide to which producer we go, we very deeply look into their factories and into the conditions, how it is worked there. And then I think it's also important that that these factories are working after certain standards, social standards, and external auditors come in and really independently look and control also the factories if certain rights such as freedom of associations are granted. And and then I think another very important point is also that brands, European brands, have to be or have to accept also higher prices, because we can also only set higher living wages or higher social standards if brands are also willing to pay more for garments, because I think that's one of the main factors how we can increase standards and living wages in India is over the price. And I think that's very important.
Yeah, and another approach is also that more and more brands are engaging in multi-stakeholder initiatives. As I mentioned before, the German Partnership of Textiles, or Textilbündnis, as we call it here in Germany, to improve collaboratively the conditions along the global textile supply chain. And Parvati, I would be curious to hear from you what role you see for these kind of multi-stakeholder initiatives in protecting workers' rights.
So there is a huge potential in all these, in the Bundes, in different initiatives that are set up in the past few years, because another problem that we have, I have not mentioned in this last few minutes, is that first of all, we don't have this industry is not open to freedom of association. And secondly, there is a lack where the workers are not able to address their grievances in the right way. So how would a brand sitting in Germany or in anywhere else in the world know what is the issue when, of course, you do have, the brands do have their audits, but our audits are most of the time held inside factories, and the workers are already threatened by the management that they're not supposed to speak anything bad about the factory. Plus, I think also the audits are done by people who do not speak the local language, and there is just a mediator or a translator in between to do the translation. So when you have all these things, it's very difficult for a worker to come up in the factory and say that, yes, the management in my factory is not paying my wage rightly, or has been ill-treating me, or for a worker to come and say that, yes, I have been harassed by the supervisor. It's really difficult. So, and there aren't enough grievance redressal mechanisms around them. So I think here is where I look at all the partnerships, various partnerships, that's the Bundes, the AGT, that's from the Dutch covenant. Then you have various multi-stakeholder initiatives like ETI, Fair Wear Foundation, Fair Labor Association, all of these, plus if you look more, you have the OECD guidance, which looks at due diligence in the supply chain. So you have to have, and it's just not one kind of, other than, of course, having labor codes in the specific, in the home country, in the producing country. So these are added advantages that I would see to the workers in the industry, because right now we are looking at labor laws becoming more stringent towards workers. And if you don't have these other grievance mechanisms, then it becomes very difficult for workers to access their rights and entitlements. And and this is where I see that it's very important to have more than one kind of grievance redressal mechanisms, more than one partnerships, where the overall goal of all these players or actors are to see an improvement in the supply chain or improvement amongst working conditions in the workers, amongst workers.
Yeah, thank you very much. So I hear from you that grievance mechanisms is really the most important thing to work on right now. Are there any other specific demands to brands that are part of the Textilbund, German Partnership for Sustainable Textiles, or is there anything else that comes to your mind?
I think I'm sure that if all brands adhere to even the standards of the partnership, or of if brands adhere to all the laws in the right way in the producing countries, I don't think there will be problems. But you know, there is always a deviation. The workers are always finding it difficult. I mean, there is always a deviation. There is some kind of issues that crop up in the factories. There is some kind of negligence, or maybe I don't know why would you not just follow the law, even if you say it's following the law of the land, that's not been followed diligently. So I think it's important that brands who are especially a part of the partnership come out and sign up to do various activities, sign up for maybe like having a complaints mechanism in place, or maybe having training for workers, coming out to the open, and also Maybe if they could come to the partnership and say that, okay, here is a percentage of our profits and we'd like to distribute it amongst the workers. So even if brands could get together and do that, it's a huge change for the workers in the industry.
I think it's so incredibly frustrating to hear that companies are still unwilling to pay more, that basic workers' rights are still systematically violated. And I really, really do think it's like time is overdue that companies step up and take responsibility for their actions.
Definitely. And now we have to come to a little bit to the end of the podcast. Maybe back to you, Parvati. Do you have any goal for the next few months with CBDEB? Is there anything that gives you hope during these difficult times for workers in India?
I think the coming few months, few months and maybe the next 2 years is going to be a really significant time for us to continue our work, because it's just that now workers are coming back into the industry. We don't know what's the kind of issues they've faced in the past few months. Have they been in debts from money lenders or maybe relatives or someone? We need to step up and find out about that. Also, we need to start working more closely with brands and for them to take up more ownership. We are also looking forward to have the new the partnership where we are starting the complaints number. So we are looking at having more kind of challenge, more like the new complaints number is coming up with, I mean, it will be taken up by the Bundes. We are looking at more complaints coming in. We want to see what kind of complaints are coming in and how we are going to address these issues for the workers. We are also trying to work with the other global networks, with the international organizations, and do a bit of lobbying and advocacy with them. We are looking at working with the OECD guidelines for businesses to take up to the guidelines and have due diligence mean followed in their supply chains. So it's a like lot of work.
Okay, so a lot of
up. Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of work. Yeah, so a lot of interesting projects that will come up in the next few months, and a lot of important work to do. And the Corona pandemic has challenged a lot of themes and subjects. And I really hope you can continue where you have stopped with your work before the crisis. And yeah, I think it's an incredible, important work you are doing with CVDEP during the pandemic, but also always before. Thanks a lot, Parvati, for this interesting interview and the insights you gave us to your work with CVDEP. It is so important that you and your team are supporting workers in India and help to protect workers' rights, and also put governments, but also companies, under pressure to implement good and fair working practices. And as you just said, just do what's in the laws. And yeah, thanks a lot also to Leah. And I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode. We are happy if you follow our podcast, Step Into the Future, on our website or Spotify. And I will also link CVDEP and also the FemNet Emergency Fund.
Thank you, Anna. Thank you very much for giving us this opportunity. And just before you can sign off, I just want to say that also we have, as consumers in the countries where the garments are being exported, we have a huge responsibilities to question the brands and ensure that they take up their responsibilities. Thank you very much for this opportunity.
Yeah, totally. Thank you. Yeah, thank you so it's much. Always important that consumers are asking questions and are critical with what they are consuming. Thank you and goodbye.